I'm thinking, I used to watch cartoons, like, till I was 37. Mr. Peabody and Sherman. And they would say at the beginning, let's set the Wayback Machine for, you know, 1066. I feel like that.
In what way?
Only that we're setting out.
Okay.
And we're setting the Wayback Machine for the present, because it's stuck on that setting.
Okay. We're edging into Charles Yu's territory.
Okay.
I had you read How to Live Safely in the Science Fictional Universe. So in that, his time machine is stuck in the present indefinite tense.
Yes.
Which sort of allows him to not be an active participant in his own life.
Oh my God.
To live in a universe. In this episode, your hosts Steve and Mal hurtle from point A to point B while considering executive dysfunction and the fundamental problems of life and death. No biggie. Strap in for the ride to Redacted. Please be advised there are occasional cuss words in these episodes. So now you know.
Saying that our Wayback Machine, our time machine, doesn't do anything with the present. I mean, human beings are time machines that travel 1 second per second into the future.
Right. And it's tempting to think it's probably been done. Like, what if you tinkered with that and you were like 0.9 seconds per second into the future?
So you're slowly falling behind everybody else?
Yeah.
I feel like other people are advancing at the correct pace, and I'm, like, just a little behind everybody else. It's like, I don't know, it's a very relatable sort of growing up feeling of, like, everybody else is zooming past, getting their life together and, you know, set in their tracks and whatever, and it's like I'm, like, fucking around back here.
What if everybody, like, feels that way?
I think a lot of people do feel that way. There are definitely people who don't feel that way, which is crazy to me. There are people who experience no self-consciousness, no, like, anxiety.
Jealousy?
They just go out into the world and live their life without thinking, like, having second thoughts about the way they interact with other people.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, fine. There are people who are, like, you know, what do you mean? Like, you just do the thing. And it's like, yeah, but the doing the thing is broken down into a thousand smaller considerations. Like, yesterday I was leaving work, and I was, like, purchasing something at work before I left. And then I was like, oh, I need to pick up laundry on my way home, which means I need to stop at the bank now before I get on the train because, you know, there's a bank here and I need to get cash for laundry, and then I, like, go home and then I pick up the laundry and then I carry it home, and then I had to, like, shower and also make myself food and, like, all of that, and then I had to get to bed at a good time, and it's just like, it was like, instead of just being like, yeah, I went home and I picked up laundry on the way home and having that be easy, and it's like, it was definitely a thing I had to check off my list, but it was like, it ended up being like a bunch of smaller subtasks, which makes it feel a lot harder. And there are people who just don't experience the world that way.
I mean, they still do laundry, those people.
They do, but it's easier. I know people who will schedule out every minute of their day, and their Google Calendar looks insane. And if this person is listening and this makes it into the episode, I don't mean to put you on blast, but, like, my Google Calendar, compared to that, looks fucking insane, because it's just, like, one task every, like, few days is on the calendar, and that's it.
I'm a little confused. Are the people who schedule, like, everything and their Google Calendar is, like, really crowded, are they better at dealing with this? Are they worse?
Like, no. Like, well, here's the thing.
I'm confused.
Here's the thing. What I'm talking about is executive dysfunction, like not being able to, like, make myself do things because in my brain they're like insurmountable tasks, even though they're not, you know? And there's various strategies for dealing with this. Uh-huh. One of the strategies for dealing with it is to schedule everything out. However, doing that is a thing that I don't spend my time doing. And so I just hold it all in my brain instead.
Well, all right. So I can totally relate to what you're talking about, especially lately. I feel like I'm trying to sort of punch up my game at work and be more productive, more organized, generate more revenue. And they're all kind of related, and things are busy. So one thing I've started to do is to put more on my calendar. And then the thing I do is I will have, you know, maybe 10 things in a given day. Some of them are breezy and easy, and some of them are like, ah, I'm going to do that. And whatever the reason, in order to psychically get through the day without, like, stressing out about, you know, like, if you have too much, totally we're on the same page about this, then the mere fact of knowing you have that much, you feel paralyzed.
Yeah.
It's like, I have that much, I can't do anything.
Correct.
Right. So in order to defeat that, you know, like just sort of glitching out, seizing up, one thing I do, like the people you're talking about, is if I write it down and I put it on the diary, but then it's like I'm starting to learn this skill of, all right, put it in order of what you think you're going to do first, and then, you know, second, third, etc. And then just do the next thing. The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the next step. And you just take that step. And it often, I find, and you can even break that down. Like, let's say I have to do legal task X, right? But legal task X, as is well known, involves steps A, B, C, D, E.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and it, let's say legal task X is a thing that's like, ugh, I hate doing this for whatever reason. It's a grind. Or, you know, I'm going to have to think in a way that I find, like, it just takes energy, it's hard, and I hate it. But it becomes manageable if I think, you know, don't do all of X. Don't even think about it that way. Just do A of X.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like it breaks the spell. And
mm-hmm.
you find that you're already done with C before you can object to it because you got it started.
Yeah.
And it's obvious to me as I'm telling you this that I'm doing it to bestow logistical wisdom on you.
Correct.
How obnoxious is this?
Well, yes. But I do that with writing. When I haven't written in a couple of days and I'm like, I really want to get into this, but like I'm not feeling the like really intense, like, oh, I have to sit down and write. What I'll do is like I'll be like, just look at it. Just read back through what you wrote. Go back and look at it. Reorganize your notes a little bit. And then usually I'm writing, you know, because I'll read through and I'll be like, oh, yeah, this was the next thing that I wanted
just,
to put.
Yeah, you just start the next thing and then you're in it. And you fooled yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You fooled your, like, you know, mulish brain that doesn't want to go there. All right, so it's obvious that so far this is turning into listeners. I wanted to say kids. Listeners.
Children. Janet.
Janet and others. This is the how to live episode.
Yeah.
This is how you how
not
to live. How to
how
not
to live crossed out safely in a science fiction universe.
Right.
It's just how
right.
to live.
How to live, cross out safely, in a cross out science fictional, and leave universe.
Yes, how to live in a universe.
Yeah, or just
a
how
guide
to live.
By two space aliens.
Right, and then.
Or one space alien and one human being.
Right, how to live.
I'll let you decide who's who. What we're talking about is tricking your brain into doing normal tasks.
Well, or
which is not something that everybody has to do, which is what I was saying before.
Okay, well, more power to them, but you know, I think there's a lot of us who do.
Yeah.
And enough so that our listeners will be very grateful for this.
Nobody who listens to this is neurotypical. Like it's
right.
just like
right. Yeah, what are you even doing here if you're neurotypical? Guys, Did you not even listen to the first episode, which was, you know, come on.
Deeply troubled.
Oh, that should have been a sign right there. We're talking about Zeno's paradox? And I know for a fact that there's at least one person who was like, no.
Who bailed?
Who?
Who bailed?
Well, I don't know if they bailed, but I'm not going to mention names because...
You can tell me. We can edit it out.
No, I'll save it for another time. Somebody...
We never just talk anymore.
It might have something to do with the fact that we're recording, which is a weird thing. It's just, speaking of strange neurological experiences, mm-hmm. another thing I do with my calendaring of tasks, mm-hmm. the ones, like a lot of them get shoved off to later days. I just move them over.
Yeah.
And there's something rather pleasant about that. I mean, some things it's like, no, you got a deadline. You can't miss this. So you got... It's got to happen. But a lot of things, it's like, they can be put off, and they do get put off.
You taught me that growing up, actually. You were like, always put off for tomorrow what you don't have to do today.
I said that?
Yes.
This is great parenting skills right here. If you're wondering why these conversations...
It was helpful for me in college because, you know, when I... you would have classes every day of the week, and then... you would have assignments from every single class. And I did homework basically every single day, but I would always do an assignment for whenever that was due. And so I would have to schedule myself for, like, when are the due dates? Like, if I have a class coming up and I need to read this by the class, it would get done by the time the class was done, and not before, because I had other things queuing that needed to be done first. You know?
Yeah, prioritizing.
Yes, and I never pulled an all-nighter in college. I was determined not to.
Oh, see, I did.
Yeah.
Particularly towards the end. And then I was done with, like, everything. I was done with all my classwork for college. And I remember taking... So back in the day, like, no personal computers. I took the paper, like, a couple of... Maybe at least one paper I had typed to the copy place. For whatever reason, I needed to make a copy of it. Went to the copy place. I was wearing, like, this thin winter jacket, and I after two nights of staying up, I was really in a kind of hallucinating state, and I remember slightly, and I was, like, walking along the street, and I passed this elderly lady who was wearing bright purple lipstick. And she was, you know, really kind of old and wrinkled, and she had this bright purple lipstick. And I remember, like, in slow motion, first of all, it was, like, a little breezy, and the breeze was, like, blowing through me. And I was, like, cold, and I had my paper pressed to my chest. And I passed this lady, and kind of in slow motion, not even 0.9, I was like, why is she wearing purple lipstick? That's weird.
That was actually me. I time traveled back.
No.
I do own purple lipstick.
Oh, my God.
And frequently wear it.
I'm going to have to unpack this. It's going to take me a while. So, anyway, enough about all-nighters.
Well, imagine if you were time traveling and you, like, were time traveling in between, you know...
In between the seconds.
Yeah. Like, not like you flicker out of... view for like a full second, but like
just,
you know,
for an instant.
Yeah, like, but over and over and over again, like a strobe light, but like,
well, they do that in movies traveling. Like, there'll be like a couple of frames, like the guy will flash back on, you know, blah blah blah.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, if that was how you lived your life, if you kind of lived in this sort of feeling like you were only touching the tops of each second, you know, like in a Wrinkle in Time, they talk about folding time the way you fold space and taking, like, basically or Diana Wynne Jones also talks about this in The Merlin Conspiracy. She talks about pleating space like a fan and then only touching the tops of it, like, when it's like a spell for, like, speeding your journey. And so, like, you're... and the advanced version is to unpleat space behind you so that somebody else doesn't, like, get caught up in it. And so, like, if you were doing that with time, if you were just sort of touching the tops of each second, are you gonna get this feeling of, like, dissociation, of like, being dislocated from other people and from reality, even though you're experiencing almost exactly what they're experiencing? It's like the opposite of what we were talking about, of, like, you know, feeling like everything's happening a little bit slower for you and you're falling more and more behind. It's like, you know, not noticeable, at least in the beginning, until you're, like, way behind. And this is, like, the opposite of feeling like I'm not grounded in reality. I'm not, like, interacting with other people in a deep and meaningful way, and so therefore, like, even though I'm getting by and everything seems fine and I'm at the same pace as other people, I'm, like, flickering in and out of reality.
Well, all right, so hear me out on this, because I think I got something.
Okay.
This could be deep.
Okay.
So strap in.
Because my thing was shit.
No, yours was like the volleyball setup, and now I'm going to spike it.
Okay, but don't hurt yourself.
You definitely are an important part of the team. Okay, all right.
Little thanks, man.
All right, man. There's a fist bump. Okay, here we go. I forgot what I was going to say. No, like what you're describing, okay, whoa, get ready for it. Isn't that, in a way, the way we actually live? I mean, you know, I'm sort of flashing back to a related, like, phrase that's come to me. The thing about, you know, that we only use, like, a small part of our brain.
Yeah, which is, like, not really how that works.
Okay.
I don't think, like, it's like you use different sections of your brain for different things.
Okay. All right, but... Like, I mean, you know, this idea that you only use, like, a part of your mental capacity. And you,
right.
And that, you know, the implication is, like, if you unlock it by, you know, super medication or eating ginger or something, or drinking ginger ale, you can become, like, awesomely, like, more, you just have more mind power. And you. But, I mean, even aside from that, maybe fake neurological saying, the idea that we probably don't live, most of the time, I think we don't live all that fully with, you know, heightened perception, but every now and then we have experiences where we feel more fully alive. And obviously what you want to do, if you want to know how to live, listeners, mm-hmm. is to
Janet
and others, in case there are others.
Janet et al.
Right. You want to, like, find a way to live or concentrate, focus on the ways that you already could be aware of that help you feel more alive.
I think that there's something to that, but I also...
Well,
like,
thank you.
But I'd also like to add that I think that in this world where things, to quote Ferris Bueller, things move pretty fast, you know... I think that we're discouraged from delving deeply into things purely by lifestyle, by the way that the world is set up.
Well, then fuck the lifestyle.
By being encouraged to maximize our potential. And potential is kind of a dumb word. People will use that when they talk about, you know, using their full brain power. They're like, the potential. And I'm like,
right.
Okay, but
right. Yeah.
Everyone has potential. You can develop that by using it. If you're just obsessed with your stats, then
right.
I think that you're not reading poetry and being challenged by the ideas of people different than you and whatever.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not finished.
Okay, go ahead.
And when you, like, live sort of a fast-paced life where you're working a lot, when you're on the grind, you may not feel that you have the time or mental capacity to do the things that bring you joy, like, that bring you, like, a deep sense of satisfaction in being alive. So, like, for me, I really like making my own pickles and cooking and trying to think.
I did not see that coming.
Well, I mean, it's true. And so, like, an indicator of when I'm having, like, a good mental health time is I'm taking a lot of time to cook and, like, to do things that are not, like, just necessary for survival, like that. I mean, I'm always making art or writing, but, you know, I don't know, cooking is kind of like the, and food, making food, it's kind of like the thing that, it, to me, is always an indicator that I'm, like, doing good. If I have a lot of consistent time to be doing that. And that hasn't been the case recently. And I think that part of that is the world is just becoming scarier and moving faster. And I constantly feel like, you know, like that feeling of, like, I'm just doing enough to survive, but I'm not, like, getting deeply into, you know, into the process of living.
Right.
And I've been trying to maximize that as much as possible by seeking out the things that, like, that my inner child really wants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, going back to all the webcomics that I used to read when I was younger, and, like, you know, listening to music that I listened to when I was younger, and, like, shows and whatever, but also participating in, like, you know, community spaces where people are also into those things, and feeding that part of myself, not just in experiencing the things alone, but also as a collective, like, building community and making friends who have shared joys.
Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, and it's like the drug revolution days had already been underway for a couple of years, not too many, or whatever they called it, and then college as well, and into like halfway through college, I had not smoked pot, and that was like, that was almost like a statement.
Mm-hmm.
Like to really, you're just not, because like so many people I knew were,
yeah,
did on a frequent basis, and then then I had that experience hitchhiking,
mm-hmm,
up to a women's college with a roommate, a sweet mate of mine. And we got a lift in the back of a pickup truck. Joints were being passed around. I've told you this.
Which college was it? Was it Smith?
Yeah, it was
Smith. I've been there.
Yeah, I had met, like, what? I had, chill out, dude. I had met we're all going to get there eventually. Why? Yeah, I feel like a Muppet character.
Yeah,
who
that was
like that.
That was
Dr.
Smiley. Dr.
Teeth.
Yeah, played by Jim Henson himself.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not surprised. We're gonna get there. But you're already. Okay. So we're in the back of this.
I do a pretty good Frank Oz.
Go for it. Oh my god, that was perfect. Everybody's holding up a 10. She's walking along the street.
Whoa, they're
here,
taking their shirts off. That's crazy.
Alright, good thing I had the window open. So I'm in the pickup truck. So the joint is being passed around, and I'm like, alright, you know what? This is, like, too much of a thing already. I'm just going to stop. What is this mission I'm on? I'm just going to fucking have it. So, you've probably heard this from me, but... So I took some, you know, inhales, whatever you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Hits.
Yes.
The people say.
Mm-hmm.
And, see, these people could just let that guy go, because what difference does it make? There's a guy looking to turn into here, and nobody wants to let him go because they're being dicks. All right. There we go.
Score one for humanity.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, and then, and it was like fall, and it was like New England, and the leaves, like colors, etc. And I'm like, I don't feel anything. Like, what is the big deal? And then I, like, realize it's like, whoa. It's like, wow. Everything's, like, so beautiful. Everything's beautiful, man. Like, these colors. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
I also, they let me graduate with an art degree without me ever once smoking weed.
Wow.
And I was like, this isn't, like, a liberal arts requirement. You know,
I will say that I know well people who, you know, were ill served by like too much, mm-hmm. pot smoking. Like, I guess nobody used to know this, but now it's kind of known that it can do a number on you a little bit. I mean, I'm not going to go crazy about that, but mm-hmm. but I've seen it. So that was a turnoff for me to continue with my stoner days. I'm just like a non-smoking stoner, mm-hmm. as you can tell.
A philosophical stoner.
Yeah. And then there was one other time I smoked. I was working in a book remainder warehouse in the summer. My dad got me the job because he knew the guy who owned the company through business. So it was like two of us running this. You know what book remainders are?
No.
All right, so textbooks, back in the day when there was paper and there were books.
Before it all burned in the fiery inferno.
Or they were all banned, or they all were digitized. And books, you know, textbooks and other books that don't sell, they get remaindered. They get put into like a warehouse. And then, you know, there are still copies. If they, you know, anybody ever wants them, they could buy them at a very reduced rate. And this company, like, was a book remainder company. And so there was just two of us. It was somewhere in Manhattan, just running it. It was like a taller, older black guy, whose name I forget, John maybe, and me. And, you know, we would get shipments of boxes in and have to, like, shelve them. Or we'd have to pack them up because there would be an order for, like, 12 random, like, different remaindered books to ship out somewhere. And that was our job. It was not that demanding, so there's plenty of time to hang out. I think I ended up smoking pot with him because he was a pot smoker. And maybe that was it, but, like, after the summer, I felt like I had had a change of attitude. Like, before then, it was like before my sophomore year in college, I had been, I had been more self-absorbed as a teenager than I became after smoking. And it was like, it sort of made me feel like, oh, you know, like, we're all connected, you know, like doing things for other people. When I got back to college, I was still in the glow of that for a couple of months before my default personality wandered back in, and it just became the same, you know, more like a different Muppet. Not sure which one. I'd like to say Kermit, but that I'd probably be lying. Sort of a cross between Kermit and Miss Piggy.
Fozzie?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But anyway, when I got back to school, it was like, I went out, I like acted in plays, which I had never done and never had the slightest desire to do, including that this one time where I had to sing on stage solo. Forgot the words till the last minute. And I also signed up for a suicide helpline to train to help people. And I think I ended up like the beneficent, you know, like people oriented. We're all one spell. Like, I guess wore off before I ever did the helpline.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I was ever unleashed on the suicidal world to help them. But I learned, like, you're not supposed to say, like.
Yeah, you should just do it.
I think you're not supposed. Yeah, you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to be like.
That's what
yeah,
AI does.
That sounds pretty bad.
They tested AI with psychology.
I know, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And
right.
They were like, yeah,
maybe
not good.
Maybe not. Maybe not you, robot. But no, so you weren't supposed to say, like, why do you feel that way? Or maybe even, how are you feeling? I mean, you would think you could say, how are you feeling? I guess if they call you, you kind of know how they're feeling.
As a teacher,
it's a suicide helpline, after all.
I've taken some courses of, like, you know, mental health stuff.
Yeah.
When your students are dealing with it, whatever. And they taught us to be comfortable, like, to get comfortable asking, like, do you think you could be a danger to yourself? Are you thinking about committing suicide? Like, are you thinking about harming yourself? Like, very, very direct.
Yeah.
Because
as teachers,
it's like then our responsibility, like legal responsibility, to pass the buck at that point, which is something that scares people about therapy. Like, you know, if you admit to your therapist, I've been having suicidal thoughts, like, you know, I think it has to be a certain, like, I think about how I want to kill myself, and, like, I think that I will kill myself, whatever. They're legally obligated to report you, and so people sometimes will not say certain things to their therapist that they should be able to say to their therapist, because they're like, what if they report me for saying this,
right,
and I get institutionalized against my will.
Right.
Which can be kind of a traumatic experience,
which is
not good, you know? If somebody's, like, having a really bad time, and then it's like, okay, and we're going to traumatize you by ruining your trust in, like, the one person who is supposed to listen non-judgmentally to you by institutionalizing you. And I'm not saying, like, if somebody says that they want to kill themselves that you should do nothing. I'm just saying, like, there's this sort of tenuous sort of anxiety between patient and psychiatrist because of
right. that. So what are you supposed to say, or you're allowed to say?
As a teacher?
Yeah, like, are you feeling...
Like, do you think that you're a danger to yourself? Are you thinking of committing suicide?
Right.
You know?
Right, but there's... Yeah, okay.
Did I tell you this? I had a student come in, and I was like, hey, what's up? Have you had, like, sports or whatever? Something that would... actually prevent them from coming to school. And he was like, no, I've been anxious and depressed. And I was like, same. I was like, yeah. What a mood.
Yeah.
But I tried not to, like, make a big deal out of it or whatever. Just let him know that that was very normal by, like, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of joking. But, like, you know, just being like, yeah, well, I'm glad to have you back. But also, like, what a mood. And... he said, like, I've been having, my parents said, suicidal intentions. And I was like, you mean suicidal ideation, which is very different. And he was like, yes, that. And I was like, oh my God, so different. Glad it wasn't the other thing.
What's the difference?
Suicidal intention would be like, I'm making a plan to kill myself.
Okay.
But, like, suicidal ideation is like my brain is fixated on suicide and keeps coming back to that idea over and over again.
Right.
Like,
I can see where the one would be more worrisome than the other. All right. Don't cross. Thank you. Oh, Jehovah's guys, probably.
No, they're Freemasons.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
Is this guy just not going to move? Let's see.
Probably not.
It's cryptic. Let's see. Is there...
By cryptic, you mean the car's not running and there's nobody inside.
And there's no lights on, but and nobody's home.
Mm.
Okay.
Well.
All right. You want to just wrap it up? Tie it all together?
I think we kind of did.
Yeah, all right.
On the drive.
That's good enough.
Yeah. We earned our paycheck today.
Yep.
Speaking of which, subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah.
Which
we don't have yet.
Which we don't
will.
But we will.
We may.
Produce content for that.
Yeah.
All right.
Feel free to comment.
Right.
Listeners. Okay. Good job. Fun chat. So now we got it all wired as far as, like, how to live.
Yeah. I think it should be smooth sailing from now on.
Either that or we'll have nothing else to talk about. Next time.
I doubt it.
Yeah, probably not.
All right.
I'm planning to do some serious backsliding.
I think that's your duty as a podcaster.
I thought you were going to say, I think that's your superpower.
Oh.
Thank you for not saying it. Yeah, I know. Thanks for not saying that.
Okay.
All right. Love you.
I love you. Get home safe.
Thanks a lot. You too.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I'm going to turn this off. Thank you.